History doesn't repeat, but it rhymes with alarming precision. Democracy isn't our birthright. It's a delicate achievement that can unravel with terrifying speed. When Yale historian Timothy Snyder published On Tyranny in 2017, he wasn't offering abstract theory, but practical wisdom distilled from studying how European democracies collapsed into fascism and communism. The slim volume became a cultural phenomenon precisely because it tapped into our collective anxiety, that the guardrails protecting our freedoms are more vulnerable than we imagined. The most chilling insight? Democracy rarely dies through dramatic coups. Instead, it erodes through a series of seemingly small compromises until the point of no return has silently passed. The parties that successfully dismantled democracies weren't omnipotent from the start. They exploited historic moments to make political life impossible for their opponents. They followed remarkably similar playbooks. Win elections, often with minorities of the vote, create constant crises to justify emergency powers, use those powers to silence opposition, and finally consolidate one-party rule. Many voters never realized they were casting their final meaningful ballot. Have you ever wondered how ordinary people become complicit in extraordinary evil? The answer lies in anticipatory obedience, complying with what we imagine rulers want before they even demand it, like offering your wallet before the mugger asks. After Hitler formed a government in 1932, voluntary cooperation, not immediate violence, transformed German society. When Germany annexed Austria in 1938, ordinary Austrians persecuted Jews without orders, showing Nazi leadership what was possible and ultimately leading to Kristallnacht and systematic murder. This isn't uniquely German. Stanley Milgram's Yale experiment proved 65% of ordinary Americans willingly administered what they believed were potentially fatal electric shocks when instructed by authority figures. As Milgram noted, "I found so much obedience that I hardly saw the need to taking the experiment to Germany." The antidote requires courage, wait to be asked. Each small surrender makes the next easier. The space between what authoritarians want and what you're willing to give is where democracy lives or dies. In democratic crises, refusing to follow the crowd can be crucial. History changes through those willing to be different when conformity seems safest. Britain's refusal to concede under Churchill in 1940 forced Hitler into the two-front war that ultimately led to Nazi defeat. We speak of our institutions as though they were immortal guardians, but institutions don't defend themselves. They need us to defend them. This misunderstanding has led to catastrophic complacency throughout history. German Jews made this fatal error after the Nazis formed a government in 1933. Many believed constitutional protections would hold, despite Hitler's explicit promises to dismantle them. Within a year, every major German institution had been hollowed out or corrupted. Institutions maintain power through our collective belief. When abandoned, they collapse with shocking speed. Courts can't enforce their own rulings, newspapers can't prevent being shut down, and laws don't enforce themselves. Each requires active defense from citizens who recognize their value. When political leadership fails, professional ethics become the last defense against tyranny. Atrocities require not just masterminds, but willing participation from professionals who abandon ethical standards. In Nazi Germany, lawyers were overrepresented among Einsatzgruppen commanders organizing mass shootings, while physicians conducted ghastly experiments. Had these professionals simply adhered to their ethical codes, the Holocaust would have been practically impossible to implement at scale. Can democracy survive without a commitment to shared factual reality? History suggests not. When we abandon truth for comfortable fictions, we surrender both individual autonomy and our collective ability to solve problems. Truth dies in four modes: hostility to verifiable reality, shamanistic repetition of emotional phrases instead of plans, magical thinking that embraces contradiction, and misplaced faith in leaders claiming, "I alone can solve it." These aren't merely rhetorical strategies, they're essential to authoritarian control. When citizens can't distinguish fact from fiction, they become dependent on authority figures to define reality. As in Ionesco's Rhinoceros, propaganda transforms people through small concessions to unreality until they've completely changed while believing they've remained the same. What we call post-truth isn't new. Orwell described it 70 years ago as doublethink. Fascist movements have always despised daily truths, preferred myths to journalism, and used media to prioritize feelings over facts. Post-truth is pre-fascism. Authoritarians thrive when citizens are atomized and afraid. By cultivating relationships across social boundaries, we create networks of trust that resist manipulation and coordinate action when needed. This begins with simple acts like making eye contact and engaging with strangers, not merely polite gestures, but essential citizenship that helps you understand your surroundings and determine whom to trust. In tyrannical regimes, even smiles took on profound significance when neighbors avoided contact out of fear. Physical presence matters enormously. Poland's solidarity movement succeeded because intellectuals and workers formed unexpected alliances across social divides. Their persistence through strikes and demonstrations eventually contributed to communism's fall, showing how embodied resistance creates lasting change. This corporeal politics requires crossing boundaries and bringing together diverse people. Power wants you passive, physically softening in chairs while emotions dissipate on screens. Resistance requires getting your body into public spaces alongside others who share your concerns. Patriotism and nationalism represent fundamentally different relationships to country. Nationalism roots itself in resentment and power obsession. As George Orwell observed, nationalists brood on power, victory, defeat, revenge, while remaining uninterested in what happens in the real world. They define their country through enemies and insist on national purity. Patriotism, however, stems from love that demands a country live up to its highest ideals. Patriots engage with reality, the only place where their country exists. They apply universal values to judge their nation, always seeking improvement. While nationalists claim it can't happen here, patriots acknowledge vulnerabilities but commit to prevention. True patriotism means holding your country accountable to founding principles, defending democratic institutions even when outcomes disappoint, and recognizing flaws while working to correct them. Standing out doesn't require grand historical roles. Teresa Prekhorowa, a young Polish woman in Nazi-occupied Warsaw, entered the ghetto with food and medicine when most focused on survival. She helped a Jewish friend escape and saved the family from deportation to Treblinka. Though later a Holocaust historian, Teresa rarely mentioned herself, calling her actions normal. The courage to stand out often comes from small decisions to maintain humanity when others abandon it. These acts create reference points for those who share our doubts but fear expressing them. Professional ethics matter most in exceptional situations, not during normal times, but when political pressure peaks. When leaders declare emergencies to justify abandoning normal constraints, professionals must recognize this as when ethical commitments matter most. Democracy demands this courage from each of us in small daily choices that collectively determine whether freedom endures. The question isn't whether tyranny could happen here, but whether we have the wisdom to recognize its approach and the courage to stand against it.